Yes, yes.
Oh, I was very, I very much wanted to meet you.
Well, maybe we should start again, folks, and if you'd like to take a seat, you're welcome. I explained at the beginning of the meeting this morning what we're doing, and maybe it would be helpful if I repeated now what I said then, because there are some folks who were not here this morning. My name is Tom Berger, and I was asked to review the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. And I've been traveling around Alaska for a year, and I've held hearings at 60 villages and towns in Alaska. And there, Alaska Natives and other Alaskans have had an opportunity of discussing the Claims Act, the land claim settlement, and have had an opportunity of giving their views on it. And I've asked them, as I asked the folks here this morning, to tell me what it's meant to you. What are the good things about the land claim settlement? What are the bad things? We have been traveling, as I say, for a year. And in some of the places we went to, Southeast Alaska, the Chugach region, the Aleutians, people said, well, we have some shareholders down in Seattle. Maybe you should find out what they think. So we decided to come here for 2 days before we completed our work, before we wrapped things up, to give Alaska Natives resident here in Seattle a chance to talk about the Claims Act, the Land Claim Settlement, and what they think about it. I guess it's you're all familiar with the fact that when Congress passed the Land Claim Settlement back in 1971, they said that Alaska Natives were to receive $962.5 million and 44 million acres of land. And it was acclaimed at the time as a most generous settlement. Many suggested it was the most generous settlement ever made by the United States with Native Americans. And indeed, the amount of money that was provided was very large, and the acreage was certainly very large, 10% of the state of Alaska. Well, then, 14 years later, here we are, and we're asking ourselves, well, what happened? How did it work out? I know that those of us who didn't live in Alaska, I come from Canada, I think you know that, in Canada and in the lower 48 at the time, we read about all this money and all this land, and the newspapers talked about Alaska Natives becoming instant millionaires. Well, we want to find out what happened to those instant millionaires. So we've been traveling around, and we've been to 60 villages, and that in every region, that has meant that we've heard from people all over Alaska. Under the settlement, Congress said that the people in each village had to set up a corporation, and that the corporation would get the money and the land, that village's share of the money and the land. 12 regional corporations were set up, and they received money and land and the subsurface rights to all the village land, or just about all of it. And a 13th corporation for Alaska Natives living outside the state was set up. Whether you're a shareholder in the 13th Corporation or Sea Alaska or Chugach or any of the others, you're certainly welcome to express your views here today. Now, maybe it would be useful to you if I told you a little bit about the hearings so far in Alaska. I said this morning that it's become apparent that for most Alaska Natives, their paramount concern is the land, the 44 million acres, and they're worried that land might slip out of Native hands if something isn't done. And there are three ways that there are a number of ways, but there are three main dangers to continued Native ownership of Native land, three ways in which they could lose their land. I've traveled all over the state, and I've heard from a lot of witnesses and experts, and I've studied the Interior Department's report and most of the other documents, and it seems to me that 44 million acres could be lost in one of three ways. The first is if a corporation goes bankrupt, then its creditors can seize its assets, and since the Native land is a corporate asset, if a corporation goes broke, its land can be taken, and it won't be Native land anymore. The second way is through corporate takeovers. The way Congress set this up in January 1992, as of January 1st, 1992, these shares that you hold in these corporations can go on the market. And if people decide that they want to take over a Native corporation, they can start acquiring shares, and if they acquire enough of them, they will control the corporation, and all of its assets will be under control of the new owners of the corporation. And the Native corporation won't be a Native corporation anymore, and the Native land won't be Native land anymore. And the third way, it seems to me, is through taxation. This isn't often discussed, but the fact is that in Alaska, 85% of the state's revenue comes from oil, and about 90% of that oil revenue comes from Prudhoe Bay. The production of oil at Prudhoe Bay is declining. That means that state revenues are likely to decline in the 1990s. And the state may be looking around for other sources of revenue, and they may turn to the Native corporation lands, which constitute the largest private land holdings in the state. Even a nominal tax on that 44 million acres could be a burden for the Native corporations. Just a tax of 25 cents an acre would require Native corporations to pay $11 million in taxes every year, and some of those village corporations, many of them, couldn't pay their share. It is conceivable that some of the regional corporations could not. So I think that there are some real problems that Native people in Alaska are concerned about. The settlement, as you know, didn't include the children born since 1971. The people that were entitled to be enrolled as shareholders were those people alive the day the act was passed, December 18th, 1971. Mm-hmm. And so if a child was born at 12:01 a.m., December 19th, 71, that was too late. That child wouldn't be enrolled, and neither would any of the children born since. So in Alaska, people have, many of them have urged that those children should be included in the settlement in some way. We've listened to proposals that people have made how to protect Native land and for the future. And one of the ideas is to get Congress to pass a law that says even after 1991, Native people can't sell their shares. That is, get a law passed that says Native people can't ever sell their shares. That will ensure that the Native corporations remain as Native corporations, that the Native land remains in Native ownership. Um, Now, some people have said, look, I'm entitled to sell those shares. That's all I got out of this thing. And those shares are going to be worth something after 1991. And I should have the right to go down to a brokerage house on Pike Street or Pine Street or somewhere here in Seattle and say, sell these shares for me. I need the money. No, that's a minority view among Alaska Natives. Most of those that have testified say, no, we got to make sure those shares stay in Native hands. We shouldn't have the right to sell them. But some Alaska Natives have said, no, we're entitled to sell those shares and get some money out of this thing. A compromise point of view has been advanced. That is that Native people should have the right to sell their shares, but only to sell them back to their own corporation. That raises some problems. Will the corporation have enough money to pay a fair price for the shares, and so on? Then another proposal that has been made is this. Some people in the villages, a lot of them, in fact, have said, look, our land will never be safe as long as it's held in corporations. So let's transfer the land to our tribal governments, to our IRA councils or our traditional councils, and keep the land safe there for future generations. So those are some of the questions people are concerned about, and I'd like to know what you think of those questions and what you think about the future. I said this morning that I'd like to hear from anyone who wishes to speak, Native or non-Native. And I think I said that I'm not really interested in recriminations. The settlement is there. The question is, what happens now? Where do people want to go from here? And we aren't really able to consider allegations against particular individuals. Those are matters for the courts in Alaska or elsewhere to determine. So it's the main lines of the settlement, what benefits you've had. If you haven't had any benefits, I'd like to know about that too. If you've got views about what should happen now, do you want to sell your shares after 1991? Or do you think you shouldn't have the right to sell them? Well, that's for you to tell me about today. I should add that Robert Peel, who spoke this morning, has asked me to have stricken from the record certain things he said on the second occasion that he spoke this morning when he referred to the state of affairs in the village corporation at Heidelberg, and those will be stricken from the record. Now, we're ready for business. If you wouldn't mind coming and speaking at this microphone here beside me, then everything you say can be taken down on tape by Jim Sykes, our sound man, and a transcript will be made. And there will be a permanent record of everything that you've said. And I'm going to write a report based on that record. More than 1,400 Alaska Natives and others have testified in Alaska. I'll be basing my record on what they have told me. And I've come here to listen to you, and I'll be basing it as well on what you've told me. And there will be a permanent record of what Alaska Natives have said about this thing, so there isn't going to be any room for argument about what you said at these gatherings. I'll be issuing a report in September. Now, I'm not representing the United States government, and I wasn't asked to do this by the state of Alaska. I was asked to do this job by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimo people from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. And the work is co-sponsored by the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Native people from around the world. And my report will go in September to those two organizations, and they will submit it to the United Nations. But I will also be making that report public, and I'll be sending a copy to all the people who testified. And I'll be sending a copy as well to every village corporation, regional corporation, IRA government, and traditional council in Alaska. And in that report, based on what people have told me, I'll set out what I conceive to be the good things about ANCSA and the bad things, and I'll make recommendations for the future based on what you've told me. And I hope those recommendations will be useful to Alaska Natives in charting their course for the future. I'll also be making recommendations for people who, Native people and their governments in other countries who are settling their land claims and want to know what happened in Alaska, what good things were achieved, what mistakes were made. So I hope that this experience can be useful not only to Alaska Natives but to Native people in other countries. Well, that's enough from me. We're ready to proceed, and I have two names who wanted to testify early this afternoon so they could get away. One is Alice Anderson, and the other is Alisa Nelson, sorry. So if you'd like to go first, you're welcome. Sorry, Alisa, not Eliza. Oh, Alice, sorry.
I'm Alice Anderson, Nana Corporation, and my address is 1118 North 7th Street, Tacoma, Washington, 98403. What I'm worried about is my kids, my grandkids, aren't one-fourth Native. They're less than one-fourth Native, and according to the bill, they won't have voting rights. When, you know, you have to be one-fourth Native. And I have 11 kids, and they all have shares. And what I'd like is for my grandkids to be able to vote.
Yeah, well, the Alaska Federation of Natives, which is an organization of regional corporations and regional nonprofit corporations, has proposed that descendants of Alaska Natives should have the right to vote, and that would include any descendant of Alaska Natives, even if they were less than one quarter blood.
So they,
I think that's their proposal. And
yeah, then that would cover my grandkids then.
Well, I guess it would.
That's the only thing I was worried about.
Yeah. Thank you,
thank
ma'am.
You very much.
I'm Alisa Nelson, and I'm from Tacoma, Washington, 602035 North 35th Street, 98407. And we're talking about the shares, and I would like to have the options of choice of the way I want my shares to go. Mm-hmm. And I think that all the shares that are to be sold should be going back to the Native corporations or sold to another Native. So it will never go out of the hands of any Alaskan, and or in a will to the next of kin to go on and on as such. I get mic fright, so don't mind if I pause. My corporation, I won't say which, has gone bankrupt, and I would not like to have them get their hands on my 100 shares. So I would like the say of where they are to go.
You would like to be able to say that they could go to other Native people and not just necessarily back to your corporation.
Yes, uh-huh, because knowing from experience how my corporation has done, well, I don't know how to express it, but the way they have handled our share, I'm not our shares, but our corporation, the way it has gone. that I would not like them to have the say as to what the my children's and my share should go to or how they should handle it. And I would be glad to pay the taxes on whatever land or whatever that would be forthcoming. I would be glad to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all I have to say. Unless I scribbled something else down here that I haven't noticed.
Take your time, take a look if you like.
Let me see. And I'd just like to say that I'm glad all of these people are here speaking up, because we just want all the shareholders, not just the leaders, to be up here telling us what to do and how to do it. And I just want more of them to come up here and have their say.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
I was up here earlier, and I was from the 13th region, and I stated that I wanted the 13th region abolished, but I didn't state why. And there was one other thing I wanted to say, was that our region has no land, and so when this when you guys' land does get taxed, we have none that will be taxed. And if I wanted to say, if there's some law that won't allow the 13th region to be abolished because they was formed by Congress, I'd like to see our corporation get some land somewhere in the future. But I still would rather be in another corporation instead of the one I'm in, because our corporation has been just has all kinds of scandals going on in it, or had. And I can't even name those because it's humiliating to really even mention them. And I just like to state that I'd like to see some land or something that I could call my own or something.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
My notes are a little jumbled, so I may have a little difficulty. My name is John Dalton. I'm a shareholder in Sea Alaska Corporation. I live here in Seattle. And I have lived in the lower 48 longer than I've lived in Alaska. I left Alaska after I completed high school. I received my education at Wrangell Institute in Wrangell, Alaska. Upon my completion of high school work at Wrangell, I had the choice of going to Riverside, California, an Indian school, or Haskell Institute in Lawrence, Kansas. And because Lawrence, Kansas offered a business course superior to that of Riverside, I chose Lawrence, although both states were too warm for me. I have not had the extensive background in Alaska Native Affairs, to say Mrs. Tillman, and I did not get involved with Native American affairs until the late 60s, when I became president of the Tsimshian Tribal Association, Washington chapter. I have been an honorary member of the National Association of Blackfeet Indians, and I have worked with the Governor's Indian Advisory Council under Governor Evans, and I have been chairman of the board of the Seattle Indian Center, and I know the problems that Native Americans have not only Alaskans, but also from down here. My concerns regarding the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act are not much different from any other Native shareholders whom you have heard over a long period of time. With the passage of ANSCA in 1971, I'm sure all Alaska Natives were full of hope for a bright new beginning to improve in all too many instances what was less than a satisfactory socioeconomic situation compared with that of the dominant average person in the dominant society. By this year, we should have looked with pride with our improved socioeconomic conditions resulting from the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. Obviously, there has been no change and little improvement, if any, and we cannot foresee that this will be so up to and including 1991. The only gain we have received from the Land Claim Settlement Act is our prorated 50% share of the monetary settlement from the federal government and the state of Alaska, which when divided on a prorated share was not sufficient to improve our lot. Although the board of directors have sung hymns of praises to themselves for the multi-million dollars in gross profits the corporation have earned, not one penny has trickled down in the form of annual dividends to Native shareholders. The corporation appears to be operating much as any federal bureaucracy, in that all earnings are spent for salaries and expenses of the board of directors and the management level of our corporations and their subsidiaries. There are multiple layers of boards and policymakers whose policies are apparently ineffective. This being the case, ANSCA has accomplished a changeover from the white man's bureaucracy, as in the case of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, to brown bureaucracy, bureaucrats who seemingly are unfamiliar or unaware of the profit-making motive and shareholder dividends. At least with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Natives received some 2 cents of service for every dollar federally appropriated. With 50% of our shares of funds from the federal and state of Alaska, shareholders more often than not see their share value in an annual financial reports in a minus bracket. That is, we're in a hole all the time. Shareholders have registered complaints at every meeting with the board members about the difficulty of obtaining non-union employment with the corporation's subsidiaries on the locally based. This notwithstanding their abilities by education and experience, at the same time the corporation maintains a far above average paid salary employees whose annual salaries equal that of any national corporations such as Ford, General Motors, or Lee Iacocca. But these people deliver high profits and therefore stock dividends to their shareholders. No one would deny or criticize management their high salaries if it were justified with a better than fair return to shareholders who own the corporations. The fact is, the board and the subsidiary management personnel appear to hold shareholders in disregard or in total contempt. Shortly before the corporation began to flounder several years ago in their financial difficulties, the top management of our local canned salmon subsidiary was receiving annual salaries of well over $100,000 a year and a bonus for the year approximating one-third of his annual salary. Within the same time frame, The corporation made a loan to some $9 million to a village corporation. When payment was not forthcoming, legal action was taken for recovery of the loan. The case was subsequently settled out of court with a loss of several million dollars to the corporation and therefore to the stockholders. Regardless of the board chairman's voodoo rationale that the corporation really did not lose, the stockholders are still minus $2 million from that transaction. Before I proceed, I would like to comment that I appreciate Fred Paul's views on the transfer of Alaska Native Corporation lands to IRS, but I have reservations about such activity. Being a lawyer, he knows more about such things than I do. I'm not really that well acquainted with Indian Reorganization Act and their procedures. In any case, several weeks ago, corporation stockholders residing in Seattle area were given an opportunity to receive a cursory review of 8 proposed resolutions resulting from the 1983 convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives and Anchorage. Few of us are able to comprehend the intent of the stilted language of these resolutions. However, I am attempting to make comments on the resolutions. AFN Resolution Number 1 proposes that the board of directors of each corporation shall establish minimum shareholder vote required to exercise the option of a concept. Option shall be exercised by a vote of corporation shareholder. The board shall establish minimum shareholder vote required, not less than a majority of a quorum of shareholders. There is no spelling out on what the majority of the quorum is, and so I'm concerned that this resolution does not indicate whether the majority is as required in the corporate bylaws or as required for an annual meeting of the shareholders. The minimum board requirement could be set so low that a relatively small number of votes cast might be regarded as a quorum. On the AFN Resolution Number 2, as now provided under the terms of ANSCA, stock cannot be alienated until the anniversary date of 1991. This resolution proposes to extend a time period for the prohibition of stock alienation by congressional amendment. Such an amendment would restrict the sale of stock by shareholders in the open and free market to the highest bidder. Had the board of directors been truly conscientious and had established sound fiscal policies for maximum earnings by corporate and subsidiary companies with the view towards financial gains sufficient to declare annual dividends to shareholders instead of the unconscionable losses annually, the shareholders would now be rallying in support of the directors, and no one would be threatening stock alienation after December 18, 1991. AFN Resolution Number 3 would allow the corporation to purchase stock from shareholders and therefore deprive the shareholder to sell stock owned on the open market to the highest bidder. While the native corporations are presently exempt from certain of the requirements of the Security and Exchange Commission, it appears doubtful that the United States Congress could or would sanction limitation of an individual's right to free trade in an open market. AFN Resolution Number 4 would permit the corporation to issue stock to persons born after December 18, 1991. It is certain that many of these persons born after 1971 would have inherited stock from parents or relatives. The present shareholders in their respective regional corporations have had 50% of their funds owing them on a pro-rata basis withheld by the corporation by law to be invested for their benefit. To date, there have been no dividends declared, at least in my corporation.
Sorry, that's C-Alaska.
Right. The issuance of new stock would dilute the value of each present shareholder's investment from state and federal contribution. Issuing additional shares to new natives then would be without worth as they are now. AFN Resolution Number 5 would prohibit transfer of stock by any means to non-natives, not descendants of natives, during any period in which the corporation stock is subject to inalienability restrictions. At present, it has been estimated that approximately 19% of the stock is now in the ownership of non-natives through inheritance. And by 1991, the total could reach 25% or more. The non-native spouses probably could litigate this prohibition under community property laws of several of the states. Resolution number 6 would authorize the corporation the option of granting voting rights to shareholder descendants of natives with less than 1/4 degree native blood quantum. The United States Department of the Interior enrollment rules state that a person who is regarded as a native by the native community may be enrolled, that is prior to 1971. If such a person may be enrolled, he already has the rights and privileges of natives with 1/4 or more degree blood quantum. Resolution number 7, land transfer, whether to the Alaska National Land Interest Land Conservation or to a native entity, presumably a native IRA council, through shareholder vote without dissenters' rights, could be harmful and of no benefit to shareholders at large, since village IRA councils now are provided federal funds and therefore are under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of the Interior, which is a federal agency. It is not unreasonable to assume that any corporate land transferred to an IRA council would thereby constitute land to become federal land again. Since only persons living within the jurisdiction of an IRA council presently may benefit from its programs, the at-large shareholders have no guarantee of protection. Resolution number 8 would authorize transfer of corporate assets to a new entity composed of natives only, without stock, but with lifetime non-transferable membership. This would prohibit transferring membership by inheritance. As I said when I began, I may have misinterpreted AFN's resolution proposals, but within my limitations, I've tried to get the gist of what they mean. Under the Alaska Native Settlement Act of 1971 in Section 2B, I would like to quote in part, "The settlement should be accomplished rapidly with certainty in conformity with real economic and social needs of natives without litigation, with maximum participation by natives in decisions affecting their rights and property without establishing any permanently racial defined institutions, rights, privileges, or obligations and without creating reservation systems or lengthy wardships or trustees, and without adding to the categories of property and institutions enjoying special tax privileges. And that is a quote from the Land Claims Act itself. As I said previously, had the board of directors and corporate management performed their duties for the greatest benefit to corporate shareholders, the possibility of stock alienation by many shareholders would not have been a major issue it is now. Stock alienation by the truly concerned native shareholders, by and large, is unthinkable. But at the same time, we understand the disenchantment of shareholders because of the longstanding unsatisfactory management of the corporation by the board of directors and corporate management. It should be emphasized to shareholders that they are the owners of the corporation. The shareholders have the collective power to move for improvement in every aspect of corporate activity. The shareholders have the right to remove directors from office by majority vote, with or without cause. The shareholders have the right to change the articles of incorporation by two-thirds vote. The old saying, "United we stand," is as true today as it was long ago. I would urge all Native shareholders to hold on to their shares and keep them inalienable. Our only chance is unite for improvement. That is the way the corporation can be maintained as a Native corporation, as intended by ANSCA, and to be a wholly Native-owned corporation as the law is written. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Dalton. I wonder if I could ask you a couple of questions so that I understand you. You feel, I take it, that the truly concerned Native person will not sell his shares, but I gather also that you feel that if he wishes to sell his shares, he should have that right.
Right. Mm.
And that means he should be able to sell to the highest bidder.
To the highest bidder.
Native or non-native?
Because I just can't see the United States Congress or the Security and Exchange Commission continuing special acts for Native corporations as is stated in the Section 2B of the Act itself, that there would be no continuing special programs after the anniversary date of 1971.
The second question I have relates to the children born since 1971. I gather that you would be opposed to the issuance of shares to the children born since 1971.
I would be opposed to it only because we have sacrificed our 50% of federal and state funds into the corporation for the benefit of shareholders as of December 18th, 1971. If the corporation is willing to achieve more land and more monies for the newborns, as they call them, then I would have no opposition to such a recommendation.
If they could get more land and more money in proportion to the number of new Natives admitted as shareholders.
Right.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I am Gilbert Matthews, and my address is 702 Northwest 58th, Seattle, Washington, 98107. And I would like to start with the problems we've had in our companies, and I think it hits many of us down here because, and in Alaska, because so many of us have gone to our companies and made application for jobs and never got them. And yet the management of our companies have been able to hire their relatives, their immediate families, and their friends over us. And we are the owners of the companies, and still we have a harder time getting in than they do. And I would like to tell you that in December of 1983, there were 710 employees working for Ocean Beauty Seafoods. And out of that 710, we had 10 shareholders working.
What was that date, year?
1983 in December.
Just for the record, and you said that was how many again?
710 employees working for Ocean Beauty Seafood.
Yeah.
And the reason I asked...
And how many were shareholders?
10.